BBC World Service, and now Play of the Week. Continuing our season of award winners from the Play of the Week sound archive, we present Truckin' Maggie by Diane Nye, the first winner of the International Radio Playwriting Competition run by the World Service Drama Department and the British Council. World Service Drama have been running the playwriting competition every 2 years now for 16 years. During that time, we've received some 8,000 scripts from writers in over 100 countries. They've all been read by our team of readers, drawn from the theatrical and media professions here in Britain, and nearly 50 writers have won prizes during that time. The outright winners each year have had the chance to travel to London to sit in on the recording of their plays, meet the cast and production teams, and see a little of London while they were here. Diane Nye was that outright winner in 1989, and she's gone on to write a further 7 plays for BBC Radio, and her stage plays have attracted several other prestigious writing awards. This, her first play for radio, takes us on a whistle-stop truck tour of the United States of America. The truck is carrying a very precious cargo indeed, and 2 extraordinary travelling companions. Nigel, the British expert in medieval history, and Hank, the American truck driver. The strain of their conflicting interests and travelling at close quarters with a stranger begin to show before they've even begun their unusual journey, and perhaps not quite in the way they expected.
Hey, hey, the cows at play in my poor lady's chamber. The cats asleep, the dogs do weep. And who can tell the danger?
Truckin' Maggie by Diane Nye, with Anton Lesser as Nigel and Bill Bailey as Hank.
Hey, hey, the cows at play, and where doth hide our Lord? The maid doth squeal at midnight peal. Oh, hear the lion roar.
The way it was, you see, was Mr. Aldon had this idea that America should see the Magna Carta, that we should just haul it around the country one time in the back of a tractor trailer. Simple as that. Stop at towns like Lubbock and Missoula and Cedar Rapids. Let the people get a look at the grand old lady of We the People declarations. And I liked the idea. And I was pretty happy he'd chosen me to head it up, or at least head up the traveling part of it. They were sending somebody from England to handle the scholarly side of things. Mr. Aldon had worked all that out with the university, but he wanted me for the hauling part of it. I'm a trucker. I picked up a few other skills in life, but basically I'm still what I was at 19, a kid with his hands on the wheel, his foot on the pedal, and the pure, dumb joy of heading out onto the highway. I say dumb, being purely honest, because only an idiot would find anything in it but misery, which I'll be happy to tell you about sometime, but, like I said, the start of this whole thing was, I got this call from Mr. Aldon.
Which rather surprised me, because I hadn't heard from the provost in some time, since I'd left my post to work on the book, as a matter of fact. I don't really know where the offer came from. He just handed it to me, and I couldn't believe my luck. A whole month trucking across America. That's what it's called, trucking. The Magna Carta part was flattering, of course, to me, and exciting, naturally. But to be honest, I had a very hard time concentrating on anything he was saying about that part of it. My mind was already in the cab of an 18-wheeler with a roar of 100-pound tyres mauling the asphalt. You see, I've been an American country music fiend since I was a boy, and trucking is a major part of all that. The two feed each other, like petrol and engine, lyrics and fact. It's all interwoven. Songs about weeks on the road alone with a good little woman pining away at home. Or conversely, songs about the good little woman pining away at home while he's taking his pleasure at every truck stop on the road. Or again, conversely, songs about weeks on the road alone while the bad little woman is taking her pleasure with everyone who comes through town. Fascinating stuff. Truth to tell, I don't really know how I ended up in medieval studies with Roy Orbison and Hank Williams twanging in my head, except it all seemed to come together for me in one of my end-of-term exams, when I wrote on the cultural parallels between medieval serfdom and the American rural class, which I won't go into here. The point is, this trip fit my plans exactly, because, you see, I'd just about decided that if the book did well, I'd make that pilgrimage across the American heartland I'd been dreaming of ever since I'd heard my first nasal sob, which greatly displeased my wife, I might add, but I hadn't really considered bringing her along anyway. From Nashville, I'd thought of heading west, with a full tape deck and a good map across all that flat open spacey part in the middle of the continent, and then farther west, to the real essence of America, days and days of open ribbon highways stretching miles before, the sheer size of it all.
Make a hell of a piece to chew, I told him. I mean, taking something that valuable and hauling it up and down and back and forth in 1 month is a hell of a lot of traveling time. But I was really just saying that for show and to kind of up my price, because I knew the man had as much brains as money, and he'd have worked out all the details to the last dot in the I. So I just let him go on telling me about it while I let my mind wander to its favorite place. You see, the marvel of the whole thing was he'd hit on something that had filled my quiet time for years, something I'd always wished I could somehow be part of, which sounds pretty silly, but you know how you think about things. I'm talking about merry oldie England, of course, and all that stuff. Arthur and Merlin and a shiny sword sticking up from a rock. Robin Hood and the sheriff and a cool green forest with adventure hiding amongst the trees. After a while, I wasn't even listening to Mr. Aldon. I was thinking of all those nights I'd spend in the cab of a truck reading about jousting tournaments and barons. Ladies in pointy hats with kerchiefs flapping from them like flags. Knights in armor that drowned them if they fell in the water. And a greedy little brother whose plain dumbness caused democracy to be written down on paper for the first time. With all that running through my mind, there was no way I could say no.
No way in the world I could say no. You see, I had in mind a considerable adventure. Ronnie Millsap, Loretta Lynn, Patsy Cline, the great Willie Nelson, and the flat open road. Behind us, the manicured town squares of bucolic Midwestern towns. Ahead of us, the spires of the great Rocky Mountains. And in between, a highway as wide as a New York deli sandwich. Extraordinary!
That I'd have something like that in the back of my truck. And in the cab next to me, a medieval scholar. I'd have on some of my Orlando de Lasso tapes, madrigals and stuff, and we'd talk. That was a thing. Someone to talk to all day long for one solid month. Someone who loved what I loved.
Minnie Pearl, Tex Ritter, the Gatlin brothers, for a whole month, trucking with a 10-4 buddy.
Both of us feeling a quiet sense of awe of, well, not to sound the cornball, but just the realization that we were transporting an icon of history, because that's what we were doing. This remnant of an age of chivalry, this small jewel set in a velvet case in the back of my truck. Together, this scholar and me, we were gonna be
Truckin' Maggie.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
Nigel Millingham.
Hank Sweeney.
Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. You're young.
Not so young.
I thought somebody, you know, lots of white hair and a little bent over. You get checked in okay? Everything all right?
Oh, yes, fine. Everything's lovely. Where's the truck?
Outside. I got her around the back.
I can't wait to see her. She is a she.
That's right. Well, you can see her, but tell me first now, what do people call you?
Well, Nigel.
All right. Now, Nigel, I'll be explaining to you a little something about trucks, about...
Well, actually, you see, in preparation for the trip, I took a course in truck handling. So I could actually step in for you. I mean, if that became necessary. I'm not expecting
it. Well, it sure as hell won't.
No, of course.
Never. That's never happened. I've been driving for 32 years.
Of course. Well, That's a wonderful record.
I'd be happy to show you how she works. I'm not trying to lock you out.
No.
It's just that that's what I'll be doing. You'll be doing the question answering.
Yes.
Although now, as a matter of fact, I could step in for you there. I mean, if for any reason...
Could you?
Yes, I've done quite a lot of reading.
You have?
Yeah, I have.
Well. Lovely. When did you say I could see the truck?
I thought maybe some dinner first.
All right, fine.
You may think you know some about trucks, but they'll surprise you.
Like women?
Just like. You married?
It was a very interesting dinner. Every time I tried to bring the conversation around to trucking, he turned into Ivanhoe and T.H. White and Charlemagne.
Every time I ask about Ivanhoe and T.H. White and just how much of the Robin Hood legend was true, he'd ask me something about truck stop cuisine or my favorite stretch of the road. The man was very...
considerate in the extreme to talk about things he assumed I'd be interested in. I didn't know quite how to handle it, actually, the first night and all. Getting acquainted, it's always a bit awkward at first.
But not with Nigel. I think we really clicked that first evening, that first meal, because I could really appreciate how much he wanted to do things my way. Kind of buttered me up in a way, I guess. Kept me talking about my kind of life. But I appreciated that. I'd been a little worried, you know, because we were going to be in tight quarters for 30 days. But there was no need. I could see that...
he would take a bit of handling, but I wasn't worried. I had devised a plan I thought would please him. A collection of apropos songs that I had especially taped in sequence of our itinerary. For instance, there was one by Susie May Parker, "He Rocked My Heart in Little Rock and I Woke Up in Waco," that I thought we could play going from Arkansas to Texas. And then I had another one.
That was particularly appropriate to the time, like "Alas Thy Face O'er Tower Ascending" and "Hey, Hey, the Cows at Play." You know, motets and madrigals and stuff like that. I had Dufay and They Pray and, of course, the DeLasso tape and a whole bunch of others. And then, for the finale, as we pulled into San Francisco, I thought we'd go with a standard that both of us could appreciate. "My Country, 'Tis of Thee," which, of course, they call "God Save the Queen." That was, unless Nigel would feel obliged to stand up, which would be awkward in the cab. Anyway.
Everything was all set. Of course, in retrospect...
it wasn't. But Monday morning quarterbacking is a fool's arrogance. Next morning, then, we were ready to roll. As arranged, we were going to have a guard car up ahead of us, one behind, and helicopter support when needed. Everything just as tight and secure as I knew it would be with Mr. Aldon. And I couldn't wait to spring my little music surprise on
Hank. Really less of a surprise than a way of expressing to him how eager I was to be a part of his world, if only for 30 short days. My considerable adventure was about to begin. First, however, there was the requisite...
kickoff ceremony in Boston, and that went pretty well. Of course, it got a little long-winded toward the end.
When the end is in sight, and this caravan of democracy has pulled into the shadow of the great Golden Gate Bridge, with all of San Francisco shouting welcome, it will have traveled a path as diverse as the history of this great nation. From Boston to Concord, New Hampshire, with a shot heard round the world signaled a new day for democracy. On to Buffalo, New York, and Cincinnati, Ohio, to Little Rock, Arkansas, and Shreveport, Louisiana, to Pecos, Texas, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, Wichita, Kansas, and Sioux City, Iowa, Fargo, North Dakota, and Bozeman, Montana, and then to the great Salt Lake City. From Utah, across Nevada, to the city by the bay. What an extraordinary enterprise begins here today!
We're going to want to check that temperature in the trailer pretty regular.
Will do.
No 10-4.
Nope. Pretty view up here, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
So, like I said last night, our first stop will be at New Lockley in a little over an hour.
Is there a truck stop there?
I don't think there is, Nigel. I was thinking more of the Holiday Inn.
Oh. Well, whatever you like.
So, we set?
I believe so.
I'm sure glad to get out of that Boston traffic. You know, with all that ceremony back there, I forgot one of my own. I think we should shake on this joint venture here.
Yes, of course, but do you think you ought to? Oh, okay. Fine. Well, it's amazing you can handle something this size, single-handed.
No problem. Do it all the time. Now, I have a...
You have a tape?
Yeah. I found this. I couldn't believe my luck. And you've got one, too.
Yes. There. Well, I thought, you know, we'd want something.
Me, too.
Apropos.
Me, too. Great minds here.
Absolutely.
What's yours?
No, please. You first.
I don't know. You've got me curious here.
Well, I'm curious, too. And I'm here to experience, well, everything about all this.
Okay. Well, I wanted something, like you said, apropos. So, I looked through some of my catalogs and I found this. And I don't think it could be more perfect for what we're doing here.
Really?
It's Edmund Grenville Tree reading the Magna Carta with St. Witherby Cathedral's lute ensemble as background.
Sorry?
Edmund Grenville Tree reading the Magna Carta with St. Witherby...
I did understand what you said, Anchor. It's not in the original Latin.
No, no. Well, I hope not. I want to be able to... No, this is in English, I think.
You don't have to do this, you know. It's very sweet of you, Hank, really, but please, don't think my being English...
No, Nigel, don't you think it. If I could have found George C. Scott, I would have grabbed it.
Although,
I do have to say there's something about that man, you know, Tree, something about his voice.
Yeah, no, I mean an English entertainment, something you think...
Entertainment? I wouldn't call this entertainment.
No,
I think of it as a mood setter, something ceremonial to mark our beginning.
I see.
Well, what do you have?
Well, I also have something to mark our beginning. Willie Nelson on the road again.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Lord Nigel, that's really nice of you. You'd naturally think that's what I wanted to hear. But I hate that country music crap.
You what?
All that whining and pining.
It's the essence of American culture.
Who told you that? Copeland, Gershwin, now there's American culture. You want culture, but I don't like that much either. Although, I can take it a lot better than that country music junk.
You don't like any of it. Loretta Lynn. June Carter. Johnny Cash. Waylon Jennings. The Judd Sisters.
Nope.
I don't know what to say.
You like that kind of music?
Like it? What do you think is in this bag?
Well, this is problemental.
Problemental? I don't believe this. Do you know how long I've been planning that? I can't believe this. I can't believe that someone who spent his life... I just don't believe this.
Yep. Sex, politics, religion, and music. There are always trouble on the road. One of the reasons I never had a partner. We'll flip a coin.
Flip a coin?
Yep. I don't see any other way to settle it. Fair and square, flip a coin. Come on, Nigel. This one will just be for today. Tomorrow we'll do it again. We'll do it every morning, and that way it'll be fair.
Do you really think it's necessary to
do this? I'm not listening to country music unless it's been decided fair and square. I'm truly sorry, but I hate that stuff. And I am...
Yes, all right.
You'll have to do the flipping.
Which do you want?
No. You take whichever one.
No, just decide, Hank.
Heads.
Heads. Right.
Johannes de Gratia Rex Handley.
Oh, hell. Nigel, can you translate that?
Yes.
Et combes, handicabbing.
Archiepiscopus.
As it turned out, I have never had such a run of flippin' luck in all my life. Every morning we'd flip the coin, and every morning I'd win. On the fifth day of this, Nigel suggested, pointedly I thought, that we use one of his coins, and we did, and I won. This lasted from Buffalo to Cincinnati and into Little Rock, where I thought he was going to have a nervous breakdown when it came up heads and he was tails again. I felt so bad about it that I told him I'd be willing to double back so he could have a country music night in Nashville. But he told me he didn't want to see Nashville under these circumstances, as he called them. And it was then I began to suspect that Nigel was
pouting, and I wasn't. I knew that's what he was thinking, because that's what my wife always thinks. She's always talking about how my jaw sets itself in a certain way, which is rot, because I am not a pouter. I simply go by the theory that silence is preferable to having to explain yourself to someone who has no concept of what you're going through. And, of course, what I was going through so far was 11 days on the road with luty, fluty, iambic pentameter. It was every awful medieval music course I'd ever had to take condensed into the space of the cab of a truck. On top of which, he'd got it into his head that the Grenville Tree tape should be played during the exhibit. Have you ever tried to answer questions from people whose accents you're having difficult time with anyway, while Edmund Grenville Tree is speaking Latin over the sound system? And on top of that, I had to deal with the surprising fact that this veteran of 32 years on the road was a miserable driver. He took incredible chances. We drove through mountainous areas in Kentucky where I just couldn't look. I don't care about his years driving a rig. Practice does not make
perfect. In fact, in Nigel's case, practice was only barely making mediocre. He was a lousy lecturer, just so damn polite all the time, and stiff as a board. There were all kinds of interesting sidelights he could have mentioned and didn't, little things I'd picked up in my reading. Of course, when I tried to mention some of them one night in just a very friendly way, you'd have thought
I'd called his parentage into question. But we know good driving in Britain. We have to. We haven't got these gargantuan highways to weave all over. We're travelling on roads that were meant for small carts and an occasional large horse. So we've developed over the years a means of carefully fitting large vehicles into tight spaces and showing some respect for the damage that can be done when said vehicles are driven by a madman.
He really took on. Well, not so much. He didn't raise his voice. But he did do something funny with his jaw. I don't know how he could eat. Anyway, with the music and all, it kind of made the break. After that, we took to eating separately. I spent more time with Jimmy and the boys. Nigel took to sampling the local fare, as he called it. Sometimes when I was coming in at night, I'd pass his room and hear him in there playing those tapes. And it would seem kind of pitiful, but I just couldn't help it.
I grew up dreaming of being a cowboy and loving cowboys.
It was very difficult to be polite in these circumstances, especially as I hadn't yet figured out how he was working the coin trick. No matter how I switched from heads to tails, I couldn't beat it, and I was furious with myself for being so damn gullible. Everyone knows Americans will do anything to win. As a nation, they preach universal honesty, but individually, they're always trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. And I just walked right into it. You see, if the man had been on the level, after 17 straight wins, he would have done the decent thing and said, oh, let's cut this out and you play what you want, Nigel.
But I just couldn't. This had gotten too big. This was the stuff of legend. 17 straight wins. If I stopped now, I'd bring all kinds of bad luck down on us. One of my wives, Virginia, my second, used to say how I carried bad luck around in my back pocket. Well, to be fair, I went through some hard times when I was with her. But what I was thinking is, I'd like to see how far this went, and then I'd call her and say, Virginia, girl, my luck has changed. How about some dinner and dancing? And you know the interesting thing? For all this talking these English do about fair play and all that, you know what Nigel tried to pull on day 18.
Morning.
Good morning. Before you start the engine, I think this morning you should flip the coin.
Me?
Yes, you.
Now, wait a minute.
Why not you?
Or will that ruin the trick?
There's no trick, Nigel. I had a feeling you were thinking that.
I'm not thinking anything. I just think you should flip the coin for a change. I'm tired of flipping it.
Now, I'm going to let the fact that you think I've been doing some kind of trick here, I'm just going to let that slip by. But I'm telling you that you have got to flip that coin, and I'm telling you why. Because what's been happening here is something extraordinary, and we can't jinx it by changing any of the circumstances. Nigel?
Breaker 1-9, this is Jimmy. Something holding you all up, Carfax?
Yes, there's something holding us up. Just wait a minute. Now, Nigel, I'm asking you not to let this get away from us here.
I don't see the problem, Hank. You're not superstitious, are you?
Damn right I'm superstitious. And you know who else is superstitious? Just about every country singer on the charts. You can't be raised in the hills and not be superstitious.
I was raised in Manchester. It doesn't apply. I find that very interesting, Hank. You never told me you were from hill country. Has it occurred to you that your hatred of American country music is a denial of your background?
Hank, Jimmy says it's a hold-up. Can we help?
Are you ashamed of your background?
No, I am not ashamed of my background. I just happen to like good music.
Yes, so do I, and that's why I cannot sit through one more chorus of Hey, Hey, the Cow's at Play. Besides, I'm feeling lucky today.
Then flip the goddamn coin!
You flip it!
All right, Nigel, I'll flip it, and I'll lose, and my streak will be ended. It won't be ended through the natural course of things, but just because you've got a prejudice against Americans.
I've got a prejudice.
You just don't trust
me. I haven't a prejudice bone in my body.
But there's something I want you to understand that maybe you can't understand, but I want you to try. When you're a trucker, you have two things that make you important on the road. One is your... I know that. I got a watch. You just sit tight and stop bothering us. The one thing is your reputation, and the other thing is your stories. If you got a good story to tell, you're welcome anywhere you stop. And this was going to be a humdinger. I mean, here I've got the Magna Carta in the back of my truck. Beside me in the cab, I got a medieval scholar, and on top of those two incredible things, I look into this incredible streak, like nothing I ever had in my life, and now all that's gone from me.
Gone from you.
Not just because I'm going to lose the toss, but because the story will have a bad taste in my mouth every time I think of it, because we didn't let it run to its natural conclusion.
You know what its natural conclusion is, Hank. I'll be put in a mental institution.
You're joking. This is a joke to you. I didn't think you'd understand.
I understand. Give me the bloody coin.
You don't have to. I just wanted you to understand something about trucking.
Hank,
and those of us...
I understand more and more each day. Give me the coin.
Sure. Here you go.
Here we go. Nigel tosses the coin. Here it goes. Oh, look, it's hit.
Woo-hoo! Who's going to believe this?
My psychiatrist, or at least he'll tell me he does.
Incredible! Let's get her rolling, Jimmy. North Dakota straight ahead.
Hey, hey, the cows at play.
Oh, we try something different. How about, this one. You'll like this one. It sort of grows on you. It's poignant.
I have left me all bereft of that which I did see.
It was on this 18th day of my musical descent into hell that I decided on chicanery. I did this not from choice, but from a deeply rooted sense of self-preservation, and also, I like to think, from a strong sense of national pride. I could not, after all, let him get the better of an Englishman, however idiotic that may sound. We can joke about it among ourselves, but there are situations one finds oneself in when it is suddenly not a joke, but a very clear mandate. This was one such situation. I think I should make it clear at this point, before describing my subsequent actions, that aside from the musical torture ensemble of lute, flute, and Hank singing along, I was enjoying myself immensely. No, it hadn't the flavour I had longed for. There was no considerable adventure here, but there were crowds of eager, friendly people, all sizes, colours, and dress. In most of the towns, Mr. Alden had managed to arrange that we were located centrally, usually near a shopping mall or government buildings. We'd arrive around dinner time the night before, and then set up the next morning, opening our doors around 8 a.m. It was an extraordinary parade of humanity that passed before us. Hank was the talker, of course, and kept up a steady flow of folksy chatter with whomever he could corner, pausing occasionally while I answered a question.
He was under a lot of pressure, you see, with the Baron's griping and the family situation. And he was short, like Nelson. Nelson was short. Did you know that? 5'4" on a good day. And Napoleon, of course. King John, Nelson, and Napoleon. All of them short. And my wife married a short man. My third wife. After me, she went with a little bitty guy about so high.
For my part, I was happy simply to observe. And what I observed was that even those who didn't understand what had brought them to that trailer had indeed come. Perhaps out of boredom. Perhaps out of some memory of a movie they'd seen or a story they'd read. Perhaps because they did love history and were sincerely interested in the Charter and its repercussions in their own lives. For whatever their reasons, I was deriving a good deal of pleasure from my travels. And I expected I would derive a good deal of pleasure from my chicanery. My plan was simple. All great plans are simple, and had the advantage of swift and easy execution. After eating my dinner, this was in Fargo, which we arrived at around 8:30 that night, I went to the walk-in emergency medical clinic and paid the attendant on duty $50 to wrap the two middle fingers of both my hands. I told him I was with the Magna Carta exhibit, and that a bunch of the fellows and I were playing a joke on one of the guys. I assured him it was not an insurance fraud, pointing out that my insurance didn't apply in this country, and that no harm would come to anyone, including himself, as I swore not to reveal who had wrapped my fingers. He did a very nice job. Very professional. I doubt a doctor could have done better, or charged more. The next morning, I presented myself and my story to Hank. I had been endeavouring, I told him, to help the waitress dish out the chili straight from the pot, which was the speciality of that particular restaurant, and that I had grabbed the pot, not realising it was boiling hot, and had burned the middle fingers on both hands. Thank God, I told him, there was a walk-in clinic not 3 doors from the restaurant. Hank's problem in this situation, of course,
was that you can't call a man a liar straight to his face without proof, and I would not have wanted to take the time to go question the waitress and the people in the clinic and any witnesses there might have been to the accident. As it was, the tension in that cab was so thick you could cut it with a knife, if you wanted a knife loose in a cab with that kind of tension. So I just had to try to read his eyes, and you know the bastard didn't even blink. Didn't flinch, didn't twitch. But then that's the English all over. One-on-one, you can trust them, but as a nation, 1 minute they're shaking your hand and the next they're colonizing your back country. And maybe Nigel had seen this as some kind of national pride thing. So, there I was on the 19th day of my run and the chain broken. And not, I was damn sure, by any
natural causes, I told him. So he certainly couldn't nor shouldn't be worried about any turn of his luck. Actually, he took it rather well, although he did stare at me for a bit. Then he grabbed the coin without saying a word, besides heads, and flipped it. I won, of course.
On the road again, like a band of gypsies, we go down the highway.
He threw the coin out of the window and didn't speak for the next 2 hours. A more vindictive man might have accused him of pouting. But I realised he was probably just keeping silent in anticipation of that first bit of bad luck he was so intensely sure would find us.
It found us on the 2-lane highway between Miles City and Billings in Montana when a thick fog descended out of nowhere as we approached a 3-way fork in the road. Jimmy ahead of us went to the right, and the boys behind went to the left, and we went straight ahead, which foul up we discovered 40 minutes later when the road we were on ended near a bunch of road repair signs and a couple of deserted tractors. It was at this point also we discovered our CBs were out. And it was as I was explaining to Nigel the ramification of these, what some people might call bits of bad luck, that the engine died. Nigel, is your mother dead?
Thank God, I thought you were never going to talk again. Sitting here, surrounded by fog, you not saying anything.
Is she dead, Nigel?
Yes, Hank. My mother died several years ago.
Would you swear on the grave of your mother that there are real burns under those bandages of yours?
No. I would not.
Do you see the havoc you have reaped upon us?
Oh, for heaven's sake. What are you doing? Hank, where are you going? Oh. Hank, for heaven's sake!
Do you know how many times I have had an engine die on me?
About as often as you've got lost in the fog, I would imagine.
That is correct.
Hank, I don't see any reason for you to panic. I mean, I'm sure they've discovered we're not with them by now and they've come back.
What do you see around you?
What? Well, not much in this fog.
And it's going to rain.
How do you know?
I can smell it, that's how.
Oh, come on. Christ.
Thank you.
Well, what are you doing? Let's get back in a truck.
Nope, I'm going to stand here and take
it. Oh, don't be an ass.
I can take anything they can dish out.
Pneumonia, is that what you're after? Because I'm very susceptible to chest ailments.
You get the connection, don't you, Nigel?
No, I don't get the connection, but I am getting back into that truck.
You see what kind of weather we're having around here? Rain and fog. Where do you have rain and fog?
What?
England, that's where.
Oh, for heaven's sake,
and who didn't let my run of luck run to its natural conclusion? And where is that person from?
That is such incredible rot.
The punishment is fitting the crime.
I am not going to stand in a torrential downpour and try to reason with an ass. I'm getting back into the truck.
Sure, leave me here.
But I would like to tell you that that shot fired in Concord, New Hampshire, was not heard round the world. You Americans think it was heard round the world. Nobody heard a thing, Hank. There were too many other important things to do. What the hell is that?
What?
That, there.
A flashlight.
Someone lives out there, do you think?
I don't know.
Oh, goodness. You think there might be trouble?
We don't know who's holding that flashlight, do we?
Who might be holding it?
Hey there!
It's pretty deserted country out here. I don't know.
Do you have a gun?
No, I do not.
Hey there!
Hey there! Back me up.
Yes, of course.
And don't tell them what we've got back there.
Damn, I didn't think. I should have checked to make sure the temperature is steady in the trailer. Look, I don't think the engine means...
Hey there! Who goes there now?
I could ask you the same question. How you doing? Oh, you having a little engine trouble?
We don't know what it is. We got lost in this fog.
Isn't this something? Hi.
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 Well, at least the rain seems to be letting up a little.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Look, you're English.
Yes.
How about that? Oh, we watch a lot of your stuff on public television.
Do you?
Sure. We were watching one of those last month. It was a repeat. It was, the war was in it.
Yes.
A lot of costumes, really butlers and people.
I see.
Yes, it was the first war.
Do you have a...
kind of talky.
What was it? Well, do you have a house near here where we could have shelter? Oh, God.
I hope you understand why I'm hesitating. You just don't know these days with people.
No, you don't.
No.
My friend and I are transporting a load to Bozeman, and we've become separated from our lead cars, and all we'd really like to do is use a telephone.
Just use a telephone.
And maybe get out of the rain.
Get out of the rain, that's all.
Could I see your driver's license?
Yeah, you can see it.
I have a passport, if you'd like to see
that. No, this will do. Yeah. Well, thank you. See, the thing is that I was hoping you were a house or something like that. I'm in a car back there with my wife and little girl. We get lost in the fog, too. I've been walking all around here, but I haven't seen anything.
Look, why don't we all get into the truck? I mean, we could...
I'm here, honey!
Hi, Daddy.
Oh, hi. Where's Mummy?
Millie! Wait for me! We're over here!
Carolyn, you shouldn't have come out in this.
Hello.
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 Look, I'd like to make the suggestion that we all get into the trailer and out of this rain.
My name's Tom Williams. It's my wife, Carolyn, and our daughter, Millie.
Hank and Nigel.
How do you do?
Hello. Very pleased to meet you. Look, what do you say to my suggestion?
Well, I guess that'd be all right, huh?
It'd certainly be warmer than our car.
Hey, Millie?
Daddy?
Well, nothing interesting.
Oh, it's a large truck, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Come on. I'm right here, hon.
It's cold in here.
Yes, I'm sorry. Because of our cargo, we have to keep the temperature at 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, let's see what we've got in the way of some food. Maybe we could have a little party.
Party?
Party?
We got some Hershey bars, and we got potato chips and some graham crackers.
What kind of cargo is this?
Nothing interesting. How about a Hershey bar?
It looks like a coffin.
That's what it is.
Not really.
Is that a joke?
We can't talk about it. So, kid, you want this Hershey bar or not?
Is there a body in there?
I think my partner is just checking.
Millie, come over here. Now, I think maybe my family and I would be better off in our car.
Well, sure.
No, this is absurd. There's no body in that case. It's the Magna Carta. We're touring America with the Magna Carta. The Great Charter, signed in 1215 by King John at Runnymede, guaranteeing basic civil rights to all free men.
Oh.
Sure, yeah, we read about that.
What's in this box?
Tools. Close it.
Millie, get over here by me.
Oh, Mom.
It is the Magna Carta. I'll be happy to show it.
Oh, right. I'll bet you might even offer to sell us some shares in it out of the goodness of your heart. Or maybe just sell it to us outright. Let us take it off your hands.
I don't understand.
How dumb do I look? You think I bought that phony accent?
What is he talking about?
He thinks we're running a scam.
Scam?
Tom, I don't think...
I'm thinking that me and my family are going to leave now. We'll just skip this party of yours.
You just wait a minute.
Perhaps it would be better if we...
We're not running a scam.
What's a scam?
We're stuck in the fog just like you. We're tired, hungry, and wet just like you. But we've got the Magna Carta with us just like you don't. And now you're not even going to see it.
Oh, the Magna Carta. That's what you're talking about. I didn't know that was still around, you know, anywhere.
Oh, yes. There are, in fact, 4 copies remaining. I'm losing my voice. The copy we have here on display is the best preserved of the 4. It's calfskin.
I want to see it, then. I'm calling your bluff, Mr.
Tom.
You can't see it.
No, Hank, of course they can see it.
You had your chance and you blew it.
I want to see it.
Of course. Now, don't you think
I'm tired of being mistrusted, Nigel?
I think we're all a little upset.
Exactly.
But I'm tired of everybody cheating and lying and trying to make a buck and thinking they can fool everybody. And I want to see what's in that case.
Well, you can't.
Well, I'm going to.
Tom, please.
I'll open it.
Here, you get away from there.
Now, wait a minute. Just let's calm down.
Come on, let me.
Careful. Careful, the lock on the inner case is set.
A bomb!
There is no bomb, my dear woman. There is no bomb and no need for alarm at all.
Hank? Are you okay?
Nigel was very considerate in the days that followed as far as music went. He pretty much let me play whatever selection I was in the mood for. This was due mainly to the fact that the 2 middle fingers on both my hands were broken during the run of bad luck which his cheating had brought down on us. I think the fact that nobody could find any logical reason for the engine dying the way it did and then starting up again for no good reason a few hours later convinced him...
that there really was something supernatural at work in all these unfortunate events which coincidentally occurred in short span. And I couldn't convince him otherwise. Exactly like the medieval serfs. I mean, just because a mechanic in Bozeman, Montana, could not detect what had been wrong with the truck does not seem to me to be absolute gospel on the condition of said truck. But I could only humour Hank at that point, because we had suddenly become extremely dependent on each other. You see,
he had lost his voice, which was a shame. But I have to admit I was kind of tickled, because I had been itching to have my chance at doing this lecturing, because he'd been missing the boat as far as pumping people up over this extraordinary piece of paper or calf skin we were displaying. Nigel went over his notes with me, and I dutifully pretended to try to use them, but I was chafing at the bit that first stop to get in front of a crowd and let loose. I knew I had a gift for it, and I knew I was going to be good. But you know what I found out? I found out how easy it is to be wrong about yourself and what you're getting into. Because it turned out I had an even greater gift than I thought. I was fantastic. I wowed them. They were almost asking for encores. And Nigel was so polite about my success. Well, you know Nigel. He'd rather hang naked from a lamppost than be impolite. So, when his envy got the better of him, he just stopped watching, and I understood. I'd surprised him with just how
abysmal he was at it. He came across as a combination of P.T. Barnum and Arthur Godfrey. The hard sell encased in an aw-shucks manner. It was just awful. The only consolation in the whole affair was that I was now doing the driving, due to the condition of Hank's fingers, so that whereas I was suffering with the thought of what he was doing to English history, I was no longer suffering the anguish of having my own life's history pass before my eyes every time we rounded a narrow curve. I have to admit that the first day behind the wheel I was a little intimidated by the need to judge my space in the lane, and there may have been a few automobile drivers whose day I made a little more exciting, but I quickly learned that if I took my time, I did just fine. I also learned that I could control Hank's need to coach my every movement by letting him play his awful music. I told him I didn't mind, as I felt it helped him set the mood for his lectures. What he minded, of course, was seeing how well I did driving his truck. He had discovered that driving with me
was something like driving with my Aunt Betty, except Nigel slowed down for yellow lights. I don't know how we made it to Salt Lake City, but we did, and I gave some of my best lectures there, it turned out. Practice making perfect. And Nigel, I have to admit, picked up a little speed as we headed across Nevada. Once he threw caution to the wind and got it up to 65, but that was probably because I let him play his Willie Nelson tape. That seemed to inspire him to speed. As we got near to San Francisco, though, I could feel him getting edgy about driving in the city. Of course, he wouldn't have admitted it, even if he could have talked. Actually, I was being kind of quiet myself, thinking about all this ending. Ever since Bozeman, Nigel and I had spent some good time together, seeing the sights, meals. He'd cut my meat for me, and I'd order for him. And I'd talk, and he'd nod, or sometimes write something down. We had our ways.
I found him, when all was said and done, a very enjoyable companion. He seemed, those last few days before San Francisco, to quieten down a bit, and think about what the two of us had accomplished together, and what it had meant to the thousands who had passed through our trailer. I remember the last evening of our journey. We pulled into Stockton, California, about 3 p.m, and Hank decided to open up, even though we weren't scheduled there, and we got a fairly large group coming out of the mail shops. And Hank gave the finest lecture I'd heard him give about just what we were doing there in a trailer in a parking lot in Stockton, California. There were a number of young children, 8, perhaps 9 or 10, who had obviously been dragged there by curious parents, and they were bored, jostling each other, and he spoke directly to them. He said, "You don't even know why you're here, do you?
You don't even know what's so important about this thing sitting here under glass. You can't even read it. I told you why it was important to those Englishmen 700 years ago, and you're saying to yourselves, 'So what?' Well, the so what of it is that the people who wrote the Magna Carta didn't pull it out of thin air. They got their ideas from democracies they'd heard about from their teachers when they were kids. Democracies going back 2,000 years to ancient Greece. So when they wrote this thing, they used those ideas and their common sense, and they came up with this. And just like 200 years ago, when Englishmen came to this country and had to write a constitution, they went back to what they learned as students about the Magna Carta, and they said, well, let's put in what they intended, not what they ended up doing. The child learns from the parent, and England was our parent, and we learned from her, and we did her one better. And that's why it's so important for you to think about what this paper says, even just for a minute. Because how do you know things are so screwed up on this planet? How do we know what's going to happen? How do you know that someday you're not going to have to get into a spaceship and go to another planet and start all over again and do us one better? And when you sit down to form a government, you'll say to each other, okay, what's fair? How do we work things around here? And then you'll remember this charter and the constitution that came from it. And you'll remember the nobleness of our dreams instead of the ignobleness of our actions. So, now we have this tape. It's in Latin, which nobody understands, except Nigel there. But he can't talk. He's not. It's laryngitis. Anyway, just to put you in the mood as you walk through, that great English actor, Edmund Grenville Tree, reading the Magna Carta.
Johannes, De Gratia, Rex Angli, Dominus Hiberni, Dux Romani et Aquitani, et Comes, Pandigani, Altie Discobis,
San Francisco. The end of our incredible journey. The end of what had turned out to be a fairly grand adventure. There was fanfare. There was Mr. Alden taking his bows. Well, he'd spent almost $2 million on the enterprise. He had a right to some applause. And there was Hank and I saying goodbye. My voice was starting to come back, but I couldn't think of too much to say. Hank was also a bit quiet. For Hank. We ended as we had begun. We shook hands. I have since abandoned my idea of travelling across America with my country music tape deck and my idiotic visions of the noble, savage trucking culture. I've even thought I might use that time to travel around my own country. Listen to the music its people are singing. Of course, my travels won't be quite the same without...
Nigel, I told him. So whatever this scheme is that's got you grinning from ear to ear, better include him. So then Mr. Aldon tells me his scheme. It seems he's taken it into his head that Britain should see the Constitution. I mean ours. You know, same setup. Drive around for a month, stopping at small towns, inviting people in to get a look. So I told him I didn't see any reason why not, but that it'd have to be the same team, Nigel and me. I didn't see why Nigel couldn't do a cram course in American history and handle the lecturing. And I knew I wouldn't have any trouble adapting to those itty-bitty roads they got over there. So Mr. Aldon's going to get in touch with Nigel, and it looks like next year we're going to be traveling around Britain, transporting one of the great democratic documents of modern history. Or, as my friend Nigel is probably going to put it, together we'll be...
Cartin Connie.
Road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
In Truckin' Maggie by Diane Nye, Anton Lesser was Nigel and Bill Bailey, Hank. Jimmy was played by William Roberts, Tom by Blaine Fairman, Carolyn by Liza Ross, and Millie by Eleanor Fairman. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The Magna Carta was read not by Edmund Grenville Tree, but by Sir Michael Horton. Hey Hey, the Cows at Play, and other such musical delights, were composed by Alistair Wilson and Martin Price, played on lute by Robert Spencer, and sung by Richard Wigmore. The sound balance was by Dave Johnston, and the production assistant was Joe Hill. Truckin' Maggie was a BBC World Service production directed by Gordon House.
Truckin' Maggie was the third in our short season of six award winners and won the International Playwriting Competition in 1989.